हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमाविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 80. Verses 14 through 17, Sri Krishna instructs Indra. Sukadeva Goswami said, "Thus glorified by Indra, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, smiled and then spoke to him as follows, in a voice resonant like the clouds." Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates. Krishna, the Supreme Lord, was praised by Indra. This suggests that Krishna was not very interested in this insignificant offender. Therefore, he spoke in a voice like rumbling clouds. This suggests his lofty position among all beings. And especially because Indra deals with rumbling clouds, then, you know. Because he doesn't speak like rumbling clouds. He works with rumbling clouds. But then here's a person who speaks like rumbling clouds. So, yes. He smiled. This suggests his magnanimity. Addressing Indra as Amum, that person, suggests the lowly position of Indra according to common usage. So he didn't even just deal with him directly. He just says that person. Right? The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Indra, it was out of mercy that I stopped the sacrifice meant for you. You are greatly intoxicated by your opulence as King of Heaven, and I wanted you to always remember me." Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates. Suitable to Indra's confession in verse 12, Indra speaks suitable to his powerful position. "Destroying your sacrifice was mercy, not cruelty. Though I should be angry at such action, I cannot be angry with a person such as you. I did this so that you could remember me again and again. Anu smritaye, and constantly."
A person such as you? It means because he's a devotee? Or he's so insignificant?
I would say you have both of those aspects. Is that he's insignificant in his position as Indra, because Indra, for the jivas, Indra is a big position, but for Krishna, that's not a very major position. And then at the same time, because he's a devotee, they're working in the capacity to serve. So the servants of the Lord, you know, he's come, he's surrendered. So I'd say you take the whole, all of those things. The Supreme Personality, so here he says again and again and constantly. So the idea is that one should regularly be remembering, but actually one should come to the standard of always constantly seeing everything connected to Krishna. That's always the better position.
If we remember, but more theoretically, philosophically, like we remind ourselves.
Right.
It's not constant though?
If we're constantly doing that, then it's constant.
But we're talking more about not spontaneous, but natural things.
Yeah, so that means with time that it'll develop into that. But the point is you have to start somewhere. Somehow or another remember Krishna. That's what the point, you know, by hook or by crook. You just, somehow you remember.
If we, instead of remembering Krishna as a person, if we remember the aspects of Brahman and Paramatma, then is that...
It's purifying.
Constant remembrance.
See, here is the constant focus, that the constance is the main thing. I tell you one story, right? You like stories. I think I told this story before also. But, you know, how you say, in the range of time, you never remember where, but... Okay, so there was this, I think it was American, you know, generally it's always Americans that do this stuff. So he was interested in the Japanese technique of bow and arrow, right, because they have a very different method. You know, they have this kind of very different kind of bow. They don't hold it in the middle. They hold it like one third up from the bottom, you know, because it's for riding on horses, because if you hook too far, it gets in the way of the horse. So they have, and you don't, you know, like the normal thing is you kind of like have it next to you and pull your one arm out. They actually put both arms above their head and pull both arms down. You know what I'm saying? Because that way then, because then you release it just at that. So when the bow gets down, it's already... gone. Well, if you have it down and pull it, it'll get in the way of the horse. You understand? So it's just a technique that was developed for that. And it's and it takes a lot of, how you say, meditation and use of, you know, the martial arts skills of chi and things like that. It's not just your normal, just mechanical kind of thing. So then he was there, he was learning it, and then, you know, it becomes known that there's this particular sound. When you release the arrow properly, it makes a specific sound, right? And so, but that's because of the combination of the whole thing, right? So then he figured this out, and then he just started practicing getting the sound. Because then if the sound's there, that means it's perfect. So he just went for getting the sound. So he practiced for a long time. He finally got it where he could get that sound, even though technically he wasn't doing all the other things correct. And so then one day he's there, the teacher's there, you know, he pulls the bow, he gets the sound, he thinks this is cool. The teacher gets actually disgusted and walks off. Is that something? Yeah, because we're catching that, it's the sound, no. It's remembering Krishna, and that happens to be constant, not that the constant, you understand? So we have to get the point is, we have to know which words to focus on. In other words, the primary. So it's remembering Krishna, that that's done constantly. Right? So that one is absorbed in Paramatma or Brahman on a constant position. But if that's your goal to get to, then you would say that that's perfect. But the point is for the Vaishnavas, then it's Krishna as a person. So... the aspects of Brahman and Paramatma, that will remind us of the person because that's where they come from. So wherever you start, and then from there, move it back till you get to Krishna, but you have to keep moving it till it gets to Krishna. Does that make sense?
Because we are practicing devotional service, that implies that it is obvious that Brahman and Paramatma implies Bhagavan.
Yes, it's obvious, and that's why the three worlds don't catch it. It's so obvious. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say, there's a expert chef. He cooks a preparation. And, you know, we're interested in cooking, but, you know, we can do okay, but we're not a fabulous cook. And so, then when we taste this preparation, we want to know what's the recipe, not what's the science. Because it came out that way because of his understanding of the science. The recipe has nothing to do with it. Does that make sense? It's not that combination, it's how he put it all, it's the science behind it. Though they're similar, but there's difference. How many people will ask, you know, the techniques that are used in the cooking? Nobody. They'll just ask, oh, what spice you put in, and what this and that. And
can we not say that the science and the recipe together makes the cooking? So both.
That's how it's manifest, but the point is the recipe is based on the science. Okay. You understand there's the primary and the secondary.
Yeah, got it.
Okay? Got yeah, that's the thing. We always have to see it from that point of view. That's why we have these formulas, so that we take it back to its original source rather than leave it in. See, because practically application, we're going to use the secondary
mm-hmm.
to manifest the primary. But if in the process we forget the primary, and it's, well, isn't it obvious that it, then that means anybody who says that, then they've missed the point.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they're instructing someone. It should be obvious that it's about the primary.
Mm-hmm.
But if someone who's doing the secondary, and you ask them about that, and then they say, well, it's obvious that it's the primary.
Mm-hmm.
But let us say, as a general rule, probably on this principle, so many men on the planet make this mistake, right? The flowers, of course, it's obvious that he has affection and that he goes to work every day. It's obvious that he's doing that for the girl, right? Isn't it? But does that work in the relationship? If that's as far as he takes it?
As long as it's obvious.
But in his mind it's obvious, but that's the point. So it becomes obvious when he mentions why he's doing it. You understand? Because it's about affection. So if it's on the intellectual platform, we can say, of course it's obvious. But that's how much of our application of Krishna consciousness is. We're so focused on the secondary, we just say, oh, that's obvious, that's the simple thing. Oh yeah, that's basic, that's Krishna consciousness 101, now we're into advanced stuff. No, what they're talking about is the working out the friction coefficient between the particular kind of rubber you have on the bottom of your shoe and the particular surface you're walking on, and so is that the best particular... surfacing for, I mean, best sole for that particular surface that you're walking on. And then we're saying, that's advanced. And we're completely missing the point, why you're out walking, where are you going, what's the purpose of walking? And we say, oh, that's obvious, but it's not obvious. You understand? Because when we ask a question and we ask why, you can see, depending upon how long we want to spend at it, you can spend 10 to 20 questions before they actually get to the quote-unquote obvious. Does that make sense? Because it's not obvious. So we see the Brajbasis, it's obvious, it's just about Krishna. As soon as there's the rain, and then they're worried about Krishna. So does that make sense? So we can't take it, oh, that's obvious. That's an intellectual platform. That's not the position here where the mind is obvious, because we're not thinking of these things. Intellect says, oh, that's obvious. But the mind's not saying it's obvious. So therefore, it's not obvious, because your perception is what your mind sees, not what your intelligence sees. The intelligence looks at things and sees some... It's just like the situation comes up. You've made a whole big scene about it. And then... the way the situation pans out, then you understand you're wrong. Right? I mean, it's just obvious by seeing there, but do you want to acknowledge it? Do you want to admit it? Everybody else is there waiting for you to say it. Are you going to? No, you're going to make up some other excuse. Oh, that's obvious. And then walk off. You understand? Because it's the mind that has to accept it. That the intelligence sees it, that actually doesn't matter. It's when the mind sees it. So when the mind is agreeable to work under the control of the intelligence, great. But that means it's obvious, so therefore the mind's always seeing Krishna. But if it's we're not, we're focusing on the detail and then saying that the primary is the obvious, then... You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So that's the...
According to this, we should concentrate on purifying the mind. That's the process also.
Yeah.
Yes.
And... what is the most effective thing? Because intelligence sees, but mind sometimes agreeable, and often is not very agreeable.
Then that's when you have a nice discussion. Because you have to point it out. And then you point out histories, you point out benefits and losses, you just go through whatever gamut is there that the might convince the mind from all the different angles. Like that. Because if you hear it long enough, after a while you start to, it creates a doubt in the efficacy of material happiness. You know? So, I mean, even if you just get a doubt, that's good. That's a step forward. You know, and then with time there'll be cracks and like this until the whole thing.
Is it because of our and personal conditioning that we misunderstand Krishna's kindness, because, you know, he gives to Arjuna all of the different ways he can be remembered, you know, through his extent, you know, through his vibhutis, and then, you know, then Arjuna says, I want to see that in one place. So then he, you know, presents himself as the universal form, and then Arjuna remembers the personal relationship, so then he brings it back to the remembrance of the personal relationship. So is it basically because of that that we're not remembering Krishna as the person, and then we see it separate?
You could just work, it's that we're conditioned to seeing, only seeing the impersonal. Paramatma means, wow, this guy's a real religious, you know, religious person. But the impersonal, that's standard. Now, whether you see it according to Shastra, whether you see it in connection with the Supreme, whether it's just based on your own speculation, that's what everybody's working at. See, everybody's functioning on the platform of Brahman, but at the same time is they don't know it's Brahman. So that's the process of self-realization, is understanding that everything you're dealing with is Brahman, because it's all Krishna. Then we might accept the supremacy of the Lord, then we'll accept the Paramatma aspect. But then we have to keep going with that till we get to the point where we accept the Bhagavan, because otherwise it doesn't explain why it's that he's in charge. He controls everything. He creates, maintains, destroys. He's the judge. He's the witness. All that, okay, makes sense. But why is he doing that? That one's the one that people don't ask. You know, sorry. Because that's even more. So as we said here, we have the technique of it, the recipe of it. Then there's the technique of it. But then even farther, why did you choose this menu or this particular method of cooking? Because that'll be on the time of the day, the people, who they are, what the occasion is. So it'll all be personal. So personal is what's behind everything. The impersonal is simply the mechanics. Because mechanics is how, you know how to drive one car, basically you can drive any car.
So like you're saying,
because of the impersonal knowledge. Right? But then there's going to be a more specific for that car. But then why is that car like that? Why has it been designed like that? You know, what's the actual point of the car? Why do you even have a car? That goes back to the personal. So everything has to go back to the personal. Right? But the tendency is we don't want to take it back that way. Of course, it's, as we say, obvious that it's all about ourselves. But we don't want it to be obvious because we want it to, because people aren't going to agree that they're all going to work for me unless I'm so powerful I can force them to. Right? There's consequences. Then maybe they'll do it for some time. But, so therefore, I want to make it look as if it is about the person themselves, about everybody else, you know. Oh, we care for everybody and all that. It's just like, you know, you have that big, nice, open space there with lots of, you know, how you say, places, comfortable places to sit, snacks, this, you know, just like it was in an airport lounge or something with, you know, all the free stuff and this and that, And that's for the employees. And then people say, oh, you care about your employees so much. No, not at all. It's just that they have read and studied and done their backup work and got, you know, the advice of professionals that if you create such an environment, then particular kinds of workers in particular environment, then they become more relaxed, more inspired, therefore they do better work. So it's simply profit. It has nothing to do with the people. Zero. Just their cogs in a machine. So if the machine will work better, you know, if it's hot out or it's cold out or it's got more oil, you know, if you oil the machine more regularly, then the machine works better. That's all you care about. People say, oh, you care about your car so much. You know, you change the tires, you change the oil, it's never out of, you know, every time I see it's always got petrol, you know, so this guy really cares about his car. No, he doesn't. He just cares about himself. He knows that if he takes care of these things, he won't run into any problems like all his friends do. Right? Does that sound like sense? Yeah, so that's all. So you make it not obvious. But then the problem is when it's dealing with Krishna, it should be obvious. Right? Because it's actually working on the actual personal platform. Because you can say as no, but it should be same. It's just not obvious for us. It doesn't need to be obvious for Krishna. Because we're a person, he's a person. But when we're dealing on the material platform, we're not dealing with ourselves as a person. We're dealing with ourselves as dead matter, as the body, and subtle body. So it has nothing to do with us, the soul, as the consciousness. We don't see that at all. Therefore, it's not actually personal. The reason we're doing everything is personal because we're a person, but we don't even recognize who we are as a person. You know, people say, "No, well, what about us? What about the individual? You know, we're just part of, you know, this whole demographic within the Varnashram system. What about me? What about, you know, but who is this me? And who's the me that's talking? It's the conditioning." You know, because for the soul, it's obvious I'm not that, but my body does have these kind of definitions or qualities. Is that... Yes?
The difficulty seems to be is that we always talk about personal, how we are persons and Krishna is a supreme person and like that. But practically, devotees can, you know, take personal approach. Actually, it's very difficult.
Yes.
Or can take like a homeopathic doses.
Yes, yes. And in homeopathic doses, the more diluted it is, they say, the more powerful it is. How that works, I don't know. That's you know, according to that, then, you know, half a fava bean for dinner would be, you know, so much more powerful than in a full meal, right? You know. But yes, it's just like that.
So then we have, on one side, we have all this nice philosophy.
Right.
But in personal dealings, people can take it. So
yes.
How do we fill that gap?
Aha. So the, how you say, the eternal British, how you say, phrase. Yes. Yes. I mean, that's, as you see as we're going through this, when we get into the 10th canto, that is personal. That's when now this kind of question, as you're mentioning, comes up. Before it was technical issues, social, economic, mechanic, like this. But now it's actually this point between personal and below that. The point is, it's just association. You just, well, you keep associating because we don't have that mood. That's the problem. But we associate with those who do have it. And so then, therefore, then these Brajabasis, they have that. All the Vaishnavas, they have that mood. So by that regular association with them, through the process of hearing and chanting and then contemplation, trying to apply it, that will fill the gap. Because slowly, we get purified, so the gap is there because of impurity, but the gap is there is also just from this idea, I'm the controller and the enjoyer. Because if we didn't have the concept of I'm the controller and enjoyer, we'd just be in that neutral state, and from neutral you come in contact with something positive, you immediately take it. You know, it's like Sukadev Goswami and Maharaj Parikit. Not Maharaj Parikit. Sukadev Goswami and the Four Kumaras. Yeah. So they were in the neutral state, and then by coming in contact with actual positive, they could see the benefit. Because they come in contact with the material so-called positive, but that's just a removal of the negative, so it never is positive. You can say it's moving in a positive direction. That you could say, but it's not that it is positive. Right? So we purify ourselves means we're reducing that. Because the effect of sin, that's not actually the big deal. Like that. It's there because of our attachment, but otherwise clearing sin is not a big deal because it's illusion anyway. Right? It doesn't actually exist for the soul. It exists for your conditioning. So your subtle body, you can say, is contaminated. But the only reason that soul acts in a contaminated way is because he identifies with it. The soul doesn't identify with the gross and subtle body, then where's the contamination? Does that make sense? So we're purifying this concept that I'm the controller and enjoyer by seeing one is how Krishna is the controller and enjoyer and how the devotees that work under the Lord's direction are actually happy. Because our idea is that if I'm the controller and enjoyer, I'll be happy. We've made that, you know, faulty premise. and it's not working. So then but we're very convinced about it. So then when we come in contact with the devotees who are working under the Lord's direction, and we see they're happy, not only are they happy, they're actually in ecstasy. And not only that, it's not occasional, it's constant. So then that aspect then makes it, we start to get it, have that faith. So that's why I said prema is mature faith. So when we first get that faith, like you said, that, you know, intellectually, that the philosophy and all that, that then we get that, and that's beginning of faith. Then we, you know, associate, we follow the process, we are willing to give up our attachments, you know, like that, to be situated regularly in devotional activities rather than just occasionally. And then slowly it moves forward. Or actually, once you get to this point, more quickly it moves forward. But, you know. Does that make sense? So it's the hearing and chanting process and the association of devotees, and we're hearing and chanting about the devotees, then that's the whole key. So the devotees are the key, because they're the ones that have, there is no gap. Is that?
Yeah.
So that's what we're trying, that's what we're doing. So it's not an intellectual thing. We're using the intelligence, right? Because it's part of the whole process. But it's not the intelligence we're trying to convince, it's the mind. Mm. Right? Because the philosophy is logical, so if the intelligence was all you had to deal with, then we would have come to the platform of pure devotion a long time ago. Right? But because it's not, it's about these aspects of it's the mind that we're trying to catch. Therefore, even though the intelligence is there and we agree with it, still the mind has some doubts. You know, because it's like, okay, all the techniques that I've tried, all the situations that I've been in, I've tried to use them for sense gratification. And it's failed. Why? So the philosophy explains that. And I'm convinced about that. But there's still the doubt, if I just had a slightly different situation or approached it in a slightly different way, then maybe I would enjoy.
Yes.
So in other words, we accept the philosophy like a theorem. It hasn't been proved wrong, but it hasn't actually been accepted 100%. Or let's say 108%. So we're convinced on the philosophical, but still the mind is saying, well, but what about this, what about that, you know, does that make sense? You know, if I buttered both slices of bread instead of just one side, would it have been better, you know? Or if I buttered both sides of both pieces of bread, would that have been better? You know, just, you know, that's, you know, we would make that, or if that didn't work, then maybe the different bread, or, you know, we just keep on going. So as we go and we start to see, that's why then we use the philosophy. That's why then we bring it up. We present the philosophy and show that, see, here you've tried again to enjoy yourself, and according to the philosophy, it still doesn't work. And it adds up that it doesn't work. You know? And then we're convinced for some time until we come up with some new plan, you know? And then after a while, we start to see those plans start to go away. By that surrender to Krishna, and by Krishna's grace, then they go away. But we have to be making the effort, right? Because it mentions that this desire to enjoy the material energy, then that's Balaram's demon. So you have to be trying, and then he'll remove it. Does that make sense? Because then you're dealing with the concept of enjoying. It's not the individual things. It's the concept. So when we start to give up the concept that you can actually enjoy separately from Krishna, that's when then Balaram starts, you know, more dynamically removing these thoughts. Is that okay? Then no gap. See, it's there's a nanosecond when between recognition and speaking.
Yes.
But if you want to make the dramatic opening, then the problem is because others are asking questions, we might move on. If no one else, then we'll wait.
Sorry.
But okay.
I was trying to formulate it. Aha,
right. Uh-huh, but then formulate, then. Yes.
You mentioned that intelligence is convinced, but it takes a time for the mind to get convinced. Now, the thing is that intelligence is from the mode of passion and mind has come from the mode of goodness. But it seems that in the material world, you know, the mind is acting in a completely opposite way. It's acting in the mode of passion and not showing any symptoms of being derived from the mode of goodness. And
no, but the intelligence is from the mode of passion, right?
Yeah.
And when the mind, which is from the mode of goodness, wants to get something done, which is activity, what does the mind do?
It refers to the intelligence.
Yes. So, in other words, it's a tool. You understand? It's just a tool that the mind uses. The whole thing, the whole subtle body, you can say is mind. But it has different features. Intelligence, false ego. Right? Polluted consciousness. These are all features of the mind. So they're different elements, but the whole thing working together, it's not that they're separately working.
Sometimes it seems like that.
That's there. But the point is that it's still, but who's still running the conversation? Right? Yeah. The point is that if the mind's not involved, the intelligence is not going to be talking so much. Right? So, yeah. Does that make sense? So, therefore, the mind is using the intelligence. So that we say if the mind is controlled by passion, therefore it uses the intelligence for, therefore, that kind of thing. If it's controlled by ignorance, it'll use the intelligence for those things. But if it's controlled by goodness, it'll use the intelligence for that. Intelligence is passion because it's what deals with the senses and accomplishes things. You understand? That's where the passion comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Goodness is what's the basis of it, what's the shastric, you know, the cleanliness, the clearness of it, the logic of it, all these different things.
Mm-hmm.
But even if we're using logic for argument's sake, we just like to argue, that's a mode of passion.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So even though we're using, you know, the intelligence and doing all these things in a proper way, it's still passion. Like that. That person said, so if you have a Brahmin who loves to argue and he's very good at it, he's in the mode of passion.
Mm-hmm.
But a Brahmin who studies Shastra may know logic, may use it, but it's not about arguing and winning and that, then he's in the mode of goodness. Does that make sense? So the one is, yeah. Okay, yes.
So in this point about understanding of the personal, is that why it's important to understand the culture? Because through the culture, the personal actually gets manifested. So then when we throw the culture out, that's...
Yes, if you don't have culture, then it's how do you express it?
Hmm.
You know, it's just like, how do I cook if I don't have any pots and pans? That's like saying, oh, I'm not the body. Oh, like that. So it's just like, if I'm not the body, but I still have to use the body to get things done. So if I'm saying, okay, a particular body can do a particular work, and then we're saying, well, we're not the body, so therefore we can do anything. We don't require, you know, we can do anything. But that doesn't make sense, because the point is it's the body that you're using to get the work done, and if the body's not suitable for that work, how will, by saying I'm not the body, recognizing I'm the soul and not the body, make the work go any better? Right? You know, it's just like, okay, I have a frying pan. And I ask the person, okay, could you grate the potatoes? And they take the frying pan over there and start to rub the potato on the back of the frying pan. Right? And then you say, Prabhu, you have to use a grater. You know, it's not, frying pans can't do that job. You have to use a grater. And then they say, I'm not this frying pan. And now it's suddenly, now the whole, you know, how you say the, you know, you have that... The skies open up, the sun comes out, you get that, you know, great, you know, melodic organ sound, that, oh, you know, like that. The Gandharvas are singing, the butterflies are flitting, and the rainbows are rainbowing, and all that, right? Because you made that statement. It clears the obstacles of everything, right? No, it's still a frying pan, and you can sit there all day, and it won't work. Does that make sense? Now, let's say the bottom of the lip You know, because when you have the frying pan, it comes down, there's that flat part in the bottom that touches nicely the thing and all that. And let's say you've dropped it, so it has a little bit of a lip on there, a little edge. And so if I get the potato just right, I can just kind of peel off and all that. So now he says, see, I can peel. It's just like, yeah, you can, but the long run, how it'll work, and all, it's just not suitable. So that's just due to attachment. That's not due to the reality. So it's not intelligent. So we're claiming to be an intelligent society, the modern society, but they're not using their intelligence because they're trying to take tools that don't work in one area and put them in another. You know, change the attitude, change who does what. You know, running a school is business doesn't make for good education. Right? It means you'll see as they get good... If you have a good businessman who's really smart, then he'll have best teachers and the students that come out of them will have the highest marks on an average, right? Because they'll say, you know, so much percentage of, you know, kids that had these marks came out of this school or, you know, or this much percentage of their the students had, you know, in this, you know, category and stuff like that, you know. But it's all about numbers. It's all about, because then if there's more numbers, more people will come, they get more profit. But it's not about actually the kids knowing the knowledge and being able to use it. They just know how to pass the test. You understand? So it's not actually about, while if you have, let's say, an educator, it's about the knowledge and how to use it and how it affects your life, your values, like that. So you could say is, yes, but that teacher is not getting such a good percentage. While the other one is. But then if you look at it, the good chance the businessman, since he is become popular, means but when he's not, he'd take anybody. But once he built it up, he'd stop taking kids that were below a particular level. So let's say, yes, you know, everybody, you know, in our, you know, point has a, you know, a 3.5 and above average, you know, so our school is better. Yeah, but they probably don't take anybody that has less than that average, or, you know, a 3-point average. They won't take anyone less. While the educator may take a wider range. So he might have people with 2-point average or like this. And so he's trying to train them. But that you took people at a 3-point average and then 70% up got to a 3.5, then okay, that's nice. But now if the educator took somebody with 2 and brought him to 3.5, now who's the better? Who's got the better education? You understand? So this is the problem, is that we only see the externals. And we just try to get the externals to do the job. We falsely create what's a particular goal. But if we look at it, the goal that they're trying to create in education, the ultimate goal is them making money. They couldn't care less about the students and this and that. They just figure out what makes for a big thing. You know, you make it into hoopla, you have a better grounds, you deal in a more posh way, you charge more money, you, you have regular yearly alumni meetings, you do lots of advertising, or, you know, so many things that they figured out that just makes more money. And so as a businessman, you can do that very easily because that's what you do. You know, and you have a headmaster that takes care of all the classes and all that, but he's the guy that works for you. Right? And as long as it's working and it's making profit, he has a job. As soon as not, he's fired. Right? While the educator, he's just working out how to educate students. He doesn't have time for all this advertising, this, that, blah, because it's just not education. You understand? So that's the thing, is when we try to use things in places they shouldn't be, then it doesn't work out very good. Right? So like that, you can go on and on and on, making examples of how the wrong people are in the wrong places. Like that. You know, in other words, if you're talking about government or governance, and you're using corporate management as an example, you have the wrong person, you know, making the arrangements. That's the whole thing. Just like this, you can see it in all places. So that's why you have, just like in the Vedic, another, you know, interesting example, wouldn't see is that in actors, right? Actors are considered Shudras, right? But the director is supposed to be a Brahmin. They're supposed to be a Brahmin who knows the Shastra of acting and the whole science. He knows everything that goes along with it. So he'll know the Natya Shastra, he'll know Kavya, he'll know, you know, all these different things. So then he knows what how to bring it out and keep it according to the rules. But the actors know how to act. And he knows how to act because generally the opening scene, the opening where the narrator comes out and interacts, and because they break the fourth wall and deal with the audience. And so they have to be good at that. That's the director. It's not an actor. So they know acting. That's what the thing. But they're not doing, you can't have, he'll do all the parts, you know, unless he does the thing, one half of his face he paints one way and another, and he turns this way and that way and does that kind of thing. But, yeah. So, the actors, now, that works perfectly. You have that, it works perfectly. Now, let us say you have a bunch of actors and they decide that they want to put together their production. There's a good chance it'll never happen. Or even if they put it together once, they can't maintain it because it's only actors. There's no problem. Right? But you have music, you know, you have the musicians, but some of the conductor is a Brahmin. But if he's an artist also, then you have a problem. Right? Nobody expects the conductor to be trippy. And if he is, it's a problem. You understand? So that's the whole point, is you can't mix these things. The body is the body, that's the way it is, and you work with it what it is now. That's what you have this lifetime. Last time you had something different, next lifetime there's something else. We're just trying to make the next lifetime the something else is spiritual. Does that make sense? The Supreme Personality of Godhead continued, a man blinded by intoxication with his power and opulence cannot see me nearby with the rod of punishment in my hand. If I desire his real welfare, I drag him down from his materially fortunate position, because it's the position that is creating the trouble for him. So if you correct that position, then his problems go away. So that's what you're trying to do. You know, that's the easiest. And then, as Krishna can take, he can also reestablish it again if there's an advantage. Yes?
Maybe sometimes devotees, they're really, you know, high-standard people and behaving nicely, and then they get into position, and then the ugly nature comes out, and then, you know, what happens we don't want to mention. And then they step down from that position and they're back into their, you know, like a normal, nice, pleasant nature. Is that means that that position is not for them?
Yes. That's in the modern, I think they call it the Peter principle. Peter. I mean, Peter is a name, but also Peter is used when something peters out. It means it just disappears. You know, there's not enough of it. You're doing something and then it runs out, that's petering out. So the Peter principle means you rise up to your level of incompetence. So it means their qualification then peters out. And so when they drop back to where they are, then they'll be the best. But the problem is because all this modern status and this and that, no one wants to be at the position that they're actually qualified at. Is that, you know... So then if one's at that, then it works very nicely. But if not, then there'll always be that bit of a problem. Means if there's a position where it works really nicely and then another position where it doesn't, then you know it has to step back to that one. If you can't find anything that works, then you just have to keep trying till you find something. You know? So if someone is a good manager, but no one likes them, that just means they need to get purified by the process. But if it's that guy that everybody loves them, but they hate his management, then it's better he does something else.
And if nobody likes him, and
he's a bad manager, then that's what the Foreign Legion is for. Like that, you know. You go off there, no one knows you. No. Like, do you know? Yeah. Yes. Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates. Krishna said, otherwise you would go astray since you became devoid of unlimited knowledge or blind by intoxication with power and wealth. But because intoxication means and is the same as madness. Your pride, pride is coming from power and wealth. You become intoxicated. That's actually madness. So we're not talking about the clinical madness. We're talking about that when due to pride you can't actually see things how they are. That's the actual madness. Right? So clinical means when you can't function in that state. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So the Vedas call madness before it gets clinical. Mm-hmm. When you're already off the rails, but since everybody's off the rails, everybody considers that normal. Right. Such a person does not see me with a cow stick in my hand, the worshippers of Krishna, or does not realize me with the stick of punishment in my hand, for people like you. Like that. Right? So then for the devotees who worship Krishna, he's got a cow stick in his hand. And for those in, like, you know, who are on the material platform, the karmis, or, those who are worried about that kind of thing, then that has. But if it, the devotion's more, but we get distracted, then Krishna deals differently.
Maharaj, he means...
He?
Yamaraj. So the stick of punishment in my hand is... He's speaking of Yamaraj as a representative of Krishna.
The stick of punishment means, yes, according to what's being done and this and that, like that. But the other, then, it'll have something that catches, but it's more of just, it's how much is necessary to correct the consciousness. The rod of chastisement means it's a stronger thing, no? Mm. You know, it means you take that formal mood. You know, the king carries the rod of chastisement, right? And like you said, he's representing Yamaraj, so... Point is, but Yamaraj is representing Krishna. So when you have the formal aspect, then, yeah? Speaking of his lordship and cowherd pastimes, he teaches bhakti found in the eternal associates such as Nanda. Since that person does not see this, I desire to give him mercy. Thus I take away his wealth, which causes his power. But seeing that this would be intolerable to you, I did not do this. Instead, I only destroyed your sacrifice. Right, so therefore, that's what you do, but if you see the person can't handle it, then you don't. Like that. I remember one devotee was telling me, you know, a very senior devotee, always around Prabhupada, and I can't remember who he was discussing it with, but he was pointing out how Prabhupada would deal with different devotees according to what they could handle. Now, he was, I think, he may have been comparing himself with another very prominent devotee who Prabhupada would chastise regularly, you know, very strongly. But he made the comment Prabhupada never did that to him. He said because he knew that he couldn't handle it. So Prabhupada would deal with him differently. And then the one who could handle it, Prabhupada would deal like that and, you know, things would get done, and you know, because they work differently, the two of them. So it's very. So we see here is that Krishna takes that into consideration. The bureaucratic know one shoe fits all, and the unfortunate thing is not even a shoe, and it doesn't even fit. But whatever, it's that kind of aspect is not actually proper. That's not how law works. So such individuals shouldn't be using the rod of chastisement. Because they don't know what it is, don't know how to wield it. Yes?
So standardization of punishment should actually not be a focus?
It can't be, because everyone's an individual and every situation is different. But if we just make it all the same, you know what I mean, like now it is. If someone does something wrong, what should you do? What's correct punishment? It's universal. It goes for anyone, everything, no matter what's been done. We've been using it for like the last 25 years.
Remove them from the position.
Okay, that's one. Then? That's just obvious.
Put it on the social forum or advertise it.
That's another thing because of the social media we have. But that's still not a punishment. That's just letting, because everybody has the right to know, therefore you let it out there because they want to talk gossip. That's another discussion. No, then no kirtan and no class, right? No position, no kirtan, no class. No position of authority, no kirtan, no class. And that solves any problem, right? You know, that's what the acharyas say, is that, you know, hearing and chanting and all that being the central feature, that by not doing that, that will actually improve devotional service. It only improves devotional service if you are following the modern morality, then devotional service will work. But as soon as you're not, then you have to stop this process, because actually bhakti doesn't have that much potency. But modern morality does.
Yeah. What they mean probably is that you should be leading in those things. He can.
I would say that is a very generous and broad-minded statement, but I would not in any way, shape, or form give them that much credit. Because if you ask why, because, you know, the devotees in general, they'll be upset if we don't do something. So this is something that they can do that somehow or another the common person accepts as something of importance. There's no discussion of philosophy, there's no training, there's no culture. So that's the whole point, is, you know, as I mentioned before. It's the culture. Without culture, how do you express Krishna consciousness? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, then you have to express it through your lack of culture. Mm-hmm. And then that doesn't work out so well. So it means, are bureaucrats known as setting the cultural standards? Mm-hmm. You know, social standards, economic standards? No. They're told what to do by people who do know that. So if we have a false idea that a bureaucracy is going to actually be a leadership principle, then what are we dealing with? That means we make shudras, how you say, non-bendable, accommodating shudras in charge. It's like the world's worst nightmare. Nobody on the planet does this. There isn't anybody who does this. Is that what it is? Yeah. Means it's one thing, as you're saying, that they should be in a leadership position, but the point is now, what's the important thing? That they are not doing these things, or they change their consciousness?
Consciousness.
Yes. Now here, Indra, they didn't change his position, they changed the consciousness. Mm-hmm. We'll change the position, not the consciousness, and feel mm-hmm. we've done a great job. Mm-hmm. But how have we done any job at all? Nothing. We've only made it worse. Mm-hmm. Because if it's all you make a mistake, you're out, that means then if you make a mistake, you're out. That means no one can be secure. And isn't the purpose of governance to make everyone secure? So you've actually accomplished the exact opposite mm-hmm. of what it's for. And then we say, but we're doing all this, like you said, putting it on the media, openness, transparency. But because if you make a mistake, therefore anything that they feel might be a mistake of themselves, it will not be transparent. Mm-hmm. I remember before, it was like the 70s, someone did something wrong, he'd just immediately say, wow, I just did this, that was really stupid. And everyone just, you know, looked and nodded and then went about their business. No one even cared to get into it. You know what I'm saying? So the difficulty is that we're getting the exact opposite of what you actually want on the social cultural platform. And due to a lack of using the philosophy. We don't use the philosophy, we don't use the tradition, we make up our own, and in the modern culture they've been making up, you know, the modern culture. For the last 3,000 years it hasn't worked for anybody, so, you know what I'm saying? So then what's the, you know, it's like, what do you call it? If you take the development of the Western culture from Greece on up through how it's gone, then according to that development, America is the pinnacle of that development. And how much do people who are not Americans like Americans? Right? Not so many. So therefore, is it going in the right direction? So therefore, what we have to see is no. See what Krishna does. Now, because the point is Indra bad at doing his job? No, he does a good job. It's just that he can't control his anger because of his pride that's come from his, you know, authority, his power. So all Krishna did was remove the power for that moment, so that he didn't get his sacrifice. He didn't remove his position, he just didn't get a particular facility. And then that triggered the whole thing, and then Krishna could chastise him. Yes.
Well, we usually cannot really separate between the two.
But that's what. But that's why we're trying to learn this, so that we separate. Mm-hmm. Because if we can separate the primary and secondary, and then within secondary, what's primary and secondary, then we can deal. Mm-hmm. So this principle of what's primary, what's secondary, whether you're seeing it on the spiritual or on the material platform, and the relationship, then that's what we're trying to get at. That's why all this. That's all this detail we can say is because the idea is no, but I know all these stories, I know the different things, I can answer all the questions and all this and that, so I have the knowledge. But the real thing is, can you discriminate between primary and secondary? That actually makes the difference. Because if we say Vedanta, what does that mean?
Philosophy,
knowledge, logic, this and that. But if someone's a Vedantist, do they know Krishna? Right? So a Bhakti Vedantist knows Krishna. Does that make sense? So the point is we're trying to discriminate using devotion. So that means we have to be able to see the primary element of something, always. That's what we're trying to catch. So it's always, how does Krishna fit into this? And then, therefore, then what is the primary aspect of the secondary we're working with? Then we look at the detail. Because if we can't see all that through, then it makes it so much more difficult to work. But if you can see all that, then it's not a problem. So you can see the detail they're working in, what's the metaphysic behind that, that is why, whether that detail is good or not, you know, and that, and the metaphysical is being seen from the gross and subtle, then you see what's the devotional. And then looking at all that, that's then when a decision is made. Right? So with Indra, then you're looking more at the, you know, mechanical of what's going on, the Brahman and Paramatma aspects. But with the devotees, then, you know, here, the worshippers of Krishna, then he's looking at it from the devotional point of view. So just how much needs to be to correct that devotional attitude? Because the identity is less. So the more the identity is on Krishna, the less then the chastisement has to take on a grosser form. Okay. Is that something?
Maharaj, even we find that the approach that Krishna used, you know, for giving correction to Brahmaji and Indra is completely different. Here, both of them offered prayers, but for Brahmaji, Krishna was completely silent, and here he's speaking at least to Indra and giving instructions. So that way, we find that even, you know, we cannot give an equal punishment to all the devotees.
Yes, no, you deal differently for different things, because if Brahma, you just don't talk, he understands everything.
Mm-hmm.
But Indra, he won't catch it.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to say something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's in a more difficult situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like this. Okay, there's something that's going on, someone's always making the same mistake. It's been said a million times, then they do it wrong again, and you're silent. Okay? So what should happen by that silence?
The other person should understand you.
Yeah, they would understand, oh, I did that again.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then they correct it. So is there need to say anything?
No.
Now, what happens if they don't even notice that you're silent and just go on? Then what's the next stage?
Understood.
Then you start talking.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's what's, so Brahma's sharper. He's got four heads, not one.
Less eyes.
Yes, more heads, less eyes. Now that's definitely an advantage. Very good point. Very good point. Less heads, more eyes. Right? Yeah. Yes. Just like when the husband and wife are walking, let's say down the French Riviera, then the wife prefers the husband to use his head more and not his eyes.
But he prefers the same.
Huh?
He prefers the same. Or the shopping mall? That she does the same?
No, that's it. But yes, okay. I would say is, okay, they're walking down the boardwalk. The wife is looking towards the shop windows. And so if he looks towards the shop windows or not, that's fine. But do you want him to look the other direction?
Yeah.
Yes, so that's the...
No, I just said that they both should use the same technique.
Oh, I see. They should both use... I didn't catch that. Okay, yes, they should both use the same technique, yes. Yeah. Then you'll save all around. So, save money, save quarreling, save... Yeah, yes. So win-win. Okay. Okay. So we have to see as each individual has to be dealt with differently in how you accomplish something. So it's one shoe fits all is not a good policy. I think it's Manu says, I think others also say, but Manu says if you deal with your juniors all the same, all of them the same, you will fail. It's not that it's not as efficient, and it's sometimes it's not good. He just says you will fail. It's 100% guaranteed. So, yeah. So these things, it's already established. That's why they're the culture. Right? The culture is what then regulates what you do. The philosophy is what you're applying, but it's applied through the culture. Then it works out nicely.
I just thought that it's actually because of our laziness we think efficiency is the best.
Because it's mode of ignorance.
Yeah.
But the point is efficiency and ignorance produces more
inefficiency.
Yeah, it just produces more ignorance. So the point is if we're efficient from goodness, it'll produce more of that. We're efficient in bhakti, it produces more of that. So it's wherever you act, that's what you produce more of. Yes.
There's also that point of shreyas and prayas, something that comes immediately.
Right, right.
And we happy.
Yes, yes.
But then we need the character actually to wait for the longer term result.
Yes.
And then when it comes, then it's a different quality.
Yes, yes. That's that would also go. Yes, yes. That's the thing. Is the shreyas is the. That requires character. That requires culture, training, you know, practice, all these different things. That's what we were mentioning before, is that if you just have this one punishment fits everybody, for the prayas, it's immediate, that everybody thinks, yes, he's done something. But in the long run, it fails miserably, because no one feels secure. But to do the other, you actually have to get in there, work, preach, talk, like this and that. So that's the way it works. And if you do it, you put in the effort, then it works nicely. Right? So that's the... Yeah. Okay, Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, "It is noteworthy that Krishna sometimes removes all of a rich man's opulences in order to facilitate his becoming a soul surrendered to him. This is a special favor of the Lord's. Sometimes it is seen that a person is very opulent materially, but due to his devotional service to the Lord, he may be reduced to poverty. One should not think, however, that because he worshipped the Supreme Lord, he became poverty-stricken. The real purport is that when a person is a pure devotee, but at the same time, by miscalculation, wants to lord it over material nature, the Lord shows him special mercy by taking away all material opulences until at last he surrenders unto the Supreme Lord." Right? So, how does this work? He has so much, he takes away, you know, takes away everything, and then he surrenders. It's a matter of Krishna takes away until one surrenders. Because the point is not to take away, the point is to surrender. So if a little thing happens and you surrender, then there's no need of taking away more. But if you are stubborn, then Krishna keeps taking until such point as then you, how you say? Surrender. Like that. Does that make sense? So if they don't, they become nasty and bitter and all that, then still you lose stuff until at some point you have to surrender. Like that.
And Krishna mentions that to show special favor, sometimes you'll take that away. So that's actually special mercy that he takes on.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that. So it's a matter of like with Bali Maharaj, he took away what he had, and then he had nothing when he surrendered. Then he gave him back more than what he had. So that's the whole, like Indra has all the opulence of the heavenly planets, right? But does Indra have to work?
Yeah,
he has to work for it. Bali Maharaj had as much or more than him on Sutala's opulence, no work. He just had to do his regular duties. He didn't have to manage the universe. So actually he had more. You know, Sudama Brahman, he had more than Indra, because Indra has to work and go through all that social stuff and this and that. But he just had to just do his regular little Brahmin stuff. Right? And because of that, then, you know, he was perfect. So Krishna's point is the surrender. And so taking away material facility is only a technique used if it works. And if it won't work, he doesn't do it. Just like with Indra, his attachment, that he doesn't take it away. Now one may claim, because we're attached, no, I'm so attached, why did Krishna take it away, this and that. But the point is that if another system would have worked, he would have used that. But it's not working, so that's why then he uses this. How do we feel the poorest of the poor when we feel we're the richest of the richest? Mm-hmm. Always remember there's someone richer than you. That's just the way it goes, you know. Then that will put things into perspective. Mm-hmm. The point is where does it come from? Where does the wealth come from, the ability, all that? It all comes from Krishna. So then, is it actually us who's so good? No, Krishna's allowed us to do that as a service. Therefore, we're humble that we're happy that Krishna allows us to do that service.
Krishna allowed us to do that service.
Well, you think it's that we're so great that he just has to, he's forced to? He actually wanted to have someone else do the service, but you're just so fabulous, he just had to let you do it.
Who knows?
Maybe, who knows? It's up for speculation.
Because Popper is proud of his king.
Yes.
Become proud of anything.
Yes, that's the point. Anything, that's the difference. You see also, it's one of the points meant in the prayers, is that we deal with material energy. Whatever we deal with, we immediately become attached. But Krishna deals and he doesn't become attached. So that's what's special about Krishna. He can control the whole material creation and still not be attached. It's all his potency. So he would say, this is mine. But he doesn't, it's not, he's not worried about it. You know, but we work with anything, even if it's not ours, then we get attached to it. Right?
You know, this point of surrender, like when things go wrong, then we surrender. And when things go right, you know, then again, you know, we take back that surrender. So this particular mood of surrender is not contiguous, you know.
No.
So then how do we maintain this contiguity of surrender so that we constantly think of ourselves that we depend on Krishna, not ourselves?
Okay. We want to be, how to be continuously surrendered to Krishna. You know, because when things are nice, then we tend to not be. When things are not nice, we tend to be. Mm-hmm. So that's why regularly things are not nice. So it'll be more continuous.
Even things are, like in some cases.
Yeah, but how often is it good?
Very often.
Very often.
Yeah.
Okay. So the point is then, but even if it goes good, will it go bad again?
It's a possibility.
Yes, it's a possibility. Slight, but still a possibility. So that means then what is so good can't actually make us happy. So if even the best situation can go bad, that means it's not the situation itself is not actually the has the ability to make us happy. Then we could also see that happiness and stress go together. Right? So therefore, then if that's the case, then can we put our full faith in the material arrangements? So then we would have to consider putting our faith in Krishna and the spiritual arrangements, because we see the residents of the spiritual world, then it always works out nicely for them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Well, here, it doesn't seem to be fabulous. Yeah? Yes?
It seems that surrender has those two main aspects. One is the intensity of the surrender.
Okay.
And it should be continuous.
Yes, yes.
All the time.
Yes.
So, there two kinds of the devotees, that one is able to really focus, but for very short or limited amount of time. And others, they can actually do all the programs throughout the day. But their focus is very minimal. Like they always, you know, in them that half asleep kind of consciousness.
Remote control.
Yeah, it's you can see that they're just not present.
You have a doubt whether they're a cyborg or not.
Okay. But they actually do all the programs from Mangalarti till the evening, whatever.
Yes. But the point is one will develop the other. By doing on a regular basis, you get purified, you're always absorbed in Krishna, so you're not doing anything that's not connected to Krishna, really, though it may not be so dynamic and positive. One slowly, slowly get until the point it comes to, then the steadiness is there. At some point, then they get that taste, and then that focus will come on Krishna. And the other one is because they're always focusing, and they focus really nicely, then that's there, that'll get purified, then slowly, slowly, then they'll get that attraction, and then they'll start to be able to do that on a regular basis.
So from both
angles you can do, you know. But the point is it will get, it's when the one gets steady, then it can go forward. And the other one is that when they start to pay attention, it'll move forward. So either one, because you have both, because that's what samadhi means. It's constant and it's intense. Like that. Does that make sense? So you can see as the effort is made to bring it up to the steadiness, but the point of the steadiness is then the intensity. So the intensity is what you're trying to get to. So now if you can relate to that and function in the intensity, you keep doing that. In other words, create opportunities that you can apply that intensity as much as possible. In other words, be attentive to if you can handle the intensity at this pace, then do that. Don't do less. But don't do more, because then you can't handle the intensity. Does that make sense? And the other one is that So then that means that you're on a regular basis applying that intensity. While the other person, they're applying regularly, but they should always be, you know, getting... It would be noteworthy for them to focus on that it is to please Krishna. There is a higher purpose. It is about developing love for Krishna. So by that awareness, then that steadiness will then turn into the other. So that's the idea. Whichever makes sense to ourselves at the present point, that's where we focus. And then as it changes, don't worry about the change unless it's for worse, but you know. You know, then we find how we can engage ourselves. But we should always note that if it's not what's recommended, that you know it can always it always has room for improvement. That's the whole point. Not that this is, you know, this works for me now, so this is the perfection. It doesn't get better than this. No, but everything.
Is it right to bring in any environment forcibly?
Forcibly.
Forcibly.
Forcefully. Depends upon what you mean by forceful and what you mean by any environment. The point is that it's a voluntary process. So you may bring someone to an environment, and then from there, then he can see the benefit of it. But if they don't want to be in that environment, even they're in that environment, why they would see something of value?
So we need Krishna take away the material facilities from someone to bring him to the Krishna consciousness to give him his benefit.
But that's... See, you should always start with what your purpose is. Because otherwise, I've answered the question based on the previous approaches. Right? Because otherwise, if you'd ask the question like this, so, you know, if you know, or say the whole thing. Should we bring someone into a position forcefully, and is that better for Krishna consciousness? You know, as we see Krishna here then did that forcefulness for Indra. You know, then you see it in its context. Otherwise it becomes, if you split it, then it's, no, it shouldn't be forced. So then why did Krishna force? You either put it together or start with, Krishna forced Indra into this, so therefore is the use of force okay? You know, you have to put it together, otherwise then it's a problem. Okay? The point is Krishna's doing what works. It's like medicine. Mm-hmm. You know, the kid may not want to take the medicine, but that's what's necessary for them to cure the disease. That's how it works. Yeah? Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki.
Jai.
Jai Jai Gaura. Jai.